Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Matt Dixon, senior meteorologist with the University of Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
My phone buzzed there, and it probably reminded everybody to shut them off or turn them down or do something.
Or move them.
Move them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all right. That's the world we live in, right?
That's right. This is a live recording, so.
That's right.
I think it was me for the first time ever. So.
Well, mine did it too, so.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think we probably both got the same text.
Yeah, mine too. So I think we all must have got the same thing.
We're important. The president needs something or something.
Okay.
I'm going to leave that alone.
How are y'all doing this morning?
Doing good.
Yep. Good. Yep, no complaints. Pretty dry down. I mean, fall is here. You know, we're recording in Bowling Green today. And I appreciate the folks here at the Warren County Extension Office for allowing us to kind of move in and record a couple of podcasts here today. And but driving down, really started seeing the color in the leaves change it. And so, and the air lets us know, too, that it's fall's here. So,
yeah, and, you know, when this show airs, it'll be on down in November. And, you know, so it, you know, by then the color should be nice. And, you know, we should be getting some cooler weather. And so we should be in good shape, which weather is a good thing to talk about today, Jay.
It is. You know, Vicki mentioned we're at the Warren County Extension Office. There is a lot of stuff going on here today. They have a regional, they're hosting a regional training, which is why we got the guests that we got. We'll be in the same training later this week in Hopkinsville. But with us today is Mr. Matt Dixon. He's senior meteorologist with Biosystems and Ag Engineering at the University of Kentucky. We'll go through the whole big long title there.
You got to add the Call to Ag's new title in there too. So.
Okay. I'm gonna have to write that down so I don't get it wrong. So we'll just say MG.
There you go. There you go.
We used to be the OG. Now we're the MG. Now, glad to have Matt with us today. He's part of this training here at the Warren County Extension Office, and we'll be with the one that we're in too. We're going to talk a little bit about disaster preparedness later in the show. But first, Matt, why don't you just give us a little rundown about these regional trainings you've been a part of and what your role is in those trainings.
So appreciate you having me on again. I think this is my third or fourth time.
I was going to say this. You are the only three-peat.
Oh, man.
That's right.
That we have ever had, Matt.
So the weather's treating you guys all right. So.
It's either that or bad. We want to complain. Man. I don't know. Whichever.
We've got to have it, so it's part of us.
Yeah, so we've had a number of major natural disasters the past couple of years here in Kentucky. We had the Western Kentucky tornado that same night. There were several strong tornadoes passed through South Central Kentucky. We had the 2022 July flooding across Eastern Kentucky. We've also had some minor disasters. I say minor with quotations because they're still very impactful. But, you know, this past March, we had that record low pressure system move through the area, 70 to 80 mile per hour winds. It wasn't associated with the storm, but it was just as impactful. Trees down everywhere, power out. I know we had power out in some places in Lexington for 2 weeks.
It was March 3rd, to be exact.
March 3rd, yes, sir. And, you know, looking back, last year before Christmas, we had a major cold front, I should say Arctic front, move through. Temperatures dropped 40-plus degrees. Temperatures went below zero. We had wind chills minus 20 and below. You know, it was a good Christmas to stay indoors last year. But in this past July, there was record flooding across Western Kentucky. So Mayfield, they got hit by that tornado back in December. And then a year and a half later, they set the all-time 24-hour rainfall record here in the state of Kentucky at just over 11 inches. So,
oh, my God.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was a record.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of that March the 3rd deal, I was talking to some insurance friends of mine that are in the insurance business. And that event, or those that few days of that event, it was worse than the tornado that hit Mayfield and took that from a statewide standpoint, you know, and how big an area that really affected. Matt, was huge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a place called the National Centers for Environmental Information, and they keep track of billion-dollar weather and climate-related disasters. And 2023, this data goes back to, I believe it's 1980, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But in 2023, we've already broken the record for the most billion-dollar weather and climate-related disasters across the U.S. Wow. And that March 3rd event was one of those guys.
Yep.
So, yep. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, going back to Mayfield, get hit on one side of the face with a tornado and then get hit on the other side with the flooding. It's been unbelievable. But here at these trainings, we're doing six trainings across the state. It's titled the Extension Disaster Emergency Preparation Training. And we're going around meeting with all the county agents across the state, trying to get them ready for the next one. It's not a matter of if we see another major natural disaster, it's when. I hate to say it that way, but it's the truth. There's going to be another one. I can't tell you when it's going to happen, but it will occur. And I hope you guys never have to deal with it, but chances are something's going to happen. And making sure all these agents are ready for the next big one, whatever it may be, a tornado, another flooding event, maybe it's drought. I mean, we're talking about dry conditions right now. The Mississippi River's running low. We can have some agricultural disasters occur, just like the Easter freeze back in 2007. So getting everybody on the same page, what we need to do before these events happen, those communication chains during the event, just having a clear picture of how Extension can respond in the wake of these events. So,
yeah, that's really important. And, you know, sometimes, Matt, it's a matter of knowing who to get a hold of.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a whole lot of it. But, you know, certainly we're thankful to be able to be trained and at least be familiar with the process. You know, we may not be actively in the incident command part of it, but we know what the process is, and we're able to help and to help. And that's Jay had used that earlier. We were talking, but you're able to help and you're willing to help. Yeah, and that's a big part of it.
And the thing in the counties, a lot of folks run to you all. They know you and they're looking for answers.
And just knowing the resources that you have in the county, I think that is important. And it's certainly important when a disaster happens, but it's really more beneficial if we can figure out what those resources that we have before a disaster happens, and then where our shortfalls are, try to figure out what we're going to do about that in the case of a disaster, and already have that in place before you really need it.
Yeah, you know, and I think those are some of the lessons that we have learned from some of the disasters Jay's been involved in, the tornadoes that came through Dawson Springs and places like that. I think we learn from the counties around, we really learn a lot about what we need and the things that we have to tap into to be able to help people during that time.
You know, that's exactly right. And those needs are going to change from place to place, depending on maybe what resources abundant in one area and not necessarily abundant in another. The severity of the storm, depending on how much you lost, or you know, if we're just without infrastructure, such as power, gas, utilities, or if we're without shelter, if our homes have been destroyed and taken everything that we own with us. So many times there are so many different rapidly changing needs on the front end of a situation that what is a dire need for the first 3 or 4 hours may not be needed at all the next day. And that's one of the things to know. And having, like David said, been through one of these where it happened in my county, not necessarily to me, but in the county there where I work, having that network built ahead of time with the local officials, with people who have maybe this resource or the people who have access to another resource, I can't begin to express how important that network is. To me, it's the first step, is having those relationships built with those folks so that you can react accordingly.
Yeah. It's better to have direction. You know, I went out to Princeton the day after that tornado went through, and, you know, it's just utter shock. And it's like, where do you start? Yeah. And these trainings are supposed to help with that, give some direction to agents across the state to be ready for the next one. And, you know, I want to mention also, it's not all about what we're losing physically. There's a mental aspect to this also. Some cases you just lost everything, but, you know, after the tornadoes, there were people, you hear the tornado sirens go off and they think the worst. Mm-hmm. Another EF4 tornado is going to come through. I talked to one county agent over in Letcher County after that flooding in July 2022, and he told me there were children that were scared to go to sleep at night without putting their shoes on because they were afraid they were going to have to run at 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's definitely a mental aspect to these.
You know, I've heard those same comments personally made by folks there in Hopkins County that any time a storm was coming up, their kids would be afraid to mm-hmm. go to sleep at night because they didn't know what they were going to wake up to the next morning. And that affects adults. It's not just children.
Yeah.
That affects adults just the same.
Yeah, but, yeah, going back to these trainings, I mean, hopefully they help out on that mental side. If there were a tornado, where are you going to take shelter? What do you need to do if your house is, you know, decimated? I hate to say it that way, but do you have a plan? So, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it's things we don't want to think about. I think that's the hard part too, when you're mentally trying to prepare yourself for a disaster, that the whole time you're hoping that it's going to it's not going to happen here. It happens, but surely it's not going to happen here, and it's not going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most dangerous things that we can do, is think that it's not going to happen to us. Yeah. And because, I mean, it's been proven over the last few years that it can happen anywhere.
Yeah.
And trying to be prepared for that and as much as we possibly can. You know, there's no way of being 100%, but as much as we can.
Well, and Vicki, like I said earlier, you know, it doesn't have to be a major disaster. I'll give you guys one example. My cousin works for a farm over in southeastern Illinois. They got hit the last day of March, this past year, by a tornado. Now, that wasn't an EF4. It wasn't a major tornado. It was an EF1, and that's relatively weak. But they lost 90% of their machinery ahead of planting season. So, something to think about.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's about being prepared. It's, you know, about, but you got to think about, what are you going to do if this happens to you, mm-hmm. or how would you go about getting new equipment? You know, how, I mean, is it even possible? You know, those are some things you have to think about. And it's all about being prepared, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously we don't want anything to happen to anybody, but, you know, there are some times that something's going to happen, you know, just like the tornado that came through there at Princeton and Dawson Springs. But, you know, we just need to be prepared on what we're going to do, how we're going to react, and some of the things that we need to know, the infrastructure that we need to know and who to get a hold of. You know, the one thing about Extension that we all talk about is we don't have to have all the answers. We just need to know who to call. Mm-hmm. And this is a lot of what this training is about, and how to be prepared for that.
Oh, I agree. And I think one of the things that, as far as like when a disaster happens, there's an outpouring of people that want to help. And like you said early, Matt, you know, a lot of times it takes you a little bit to even wrap your head around what happened, let alone when everybody's saying, what can I do? What do you need? What can I bring you? And you don't even know.
You don't know where to put it.
That's just it. You don't have a place to put it. And I know that when we helped, you know, we went over and helped Jay a couple of days, and there was so much stuff that you appreciate everything, but there was nowhere to put it. People were running out of places to put things. And I think that is one of the things that I took away from that as an individual wanting to help somebody the next time a disaster happens. One thing I learned is just wait. Mm-hmm. Just wait for a minute, because when you have so much stuff you don't know what to do with, it becomes a problem.
We saw so many supplies, clothes, donations. I hate to say this, but we saw so much stuff go to waste.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was in an area to where all the buildings were gone. Mm-hmm. There was no place for it to be but outside, filling up church parking lots. Mm-hmm. And just a couple of days after that storm, within a week, actually, of the tornado there in 2020, we had a pretty good-sized rainfall that went along with that, dumped about 3 inches of rain. And if your cardboard boxes of food, macaroni and cheese was what I remember coming to mind, sitting outside stacked on pallets. That's what happens to it. It's a problem.
Yeah. Yep.
So knowing what to give, knowing when to give, mm-hmm. There's certain things that you need for a little while and then you don't need any more. One of the biggest things that folks need in the very front end of an accident like that or an incident like that is they need space. They need time. They need to be able to get a grip on the situation, see what's going on before they can really say what they need. I know one guy in particular, I won't call his name, but lost everything he owned. He spent the first day, that Saturday after the tornado, getting his family seen to. Right there in close, getting a place to stay, getting some things moved. And then he didn't go back to his house for 3 or 4 days. There wasn't nothing there. He went and helped everybody else. He started helping folks down the road. He took the one tractor he had running and started clearing roads with it. And he was the guy that I helped clear a lot of roads. But he needed that day to get his family seen to get both of his kids and his wife seen to. And then he said, all right, let's go help other people. He had nothing else to take care of. It was all gone.
Well, you bring up a good point. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon after these events. So it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
There is a definite skill set that I think some folks need to be able to respond to situations like that. And I'm not saying I have it or don't, or I know a lot of folks who do, but I think just that willingness to not come in and say, this is what you need, but the willingness to come in and say, how can I help? You tell me what you need. You tell me what to do. Show me something to do and then let me go do it. That's a very defined skill set that I think is almost required by those first people on a scene like that.
Yeah, and we don't want to be causing a problem, and we don't want to be, it's good to collect stuff and that people need, but we don't want to send that to them if it's going to cause them a problem, that they've got another problem that they've got to deal with besides what they're dealing with already. So I think that's when Vicki made the comment about, just wait and see what they need is, everybody wants to help and thank goodness for that. But we certainly don't want to cause a problem that when we start sending stuff.
We saw that there directly. The willingness for people to give is astounding. There are so many good people who will give and give and give, sometimes way more than what you need. I wish there was a clearinghouse, some way, and maybe that could be one of Extension's positions, is to be that clearinghouse that puts up the beacon that says, we don't need clothes, we don't need cases of water, we need medical supplies. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we need cases of water, or maybe we need clothes. To be able to put that message out to the rest of the world. Because people respond quicker than...
Immediately.
Yeah, immediately.
Oh, yeah.
I talked folks out of bringing supplies once we were a week into it. Folks from other states who would call my office and say, one in particular was in West Virginia. She said, we've got 3 rental trucks filled. We're ready to head out. We just need an address. And I talked her into not leaving town. Maybe, I don't know if they ended up leaving town and going somewhere else with it. I hope they found a place for all their donations. We just had more than we could deal with. Mm-hmm. At one time, we had, this is hard to imagine, but we had rows in a big parking lot of pallets of cases of bottled water that were 8 semis long, and I think it was 5 semis wide. And that was the leftover water after all the distribution was done. We just had that much. I sent some over into Vicki's County to the Boys and Girls Club. We give it to whoever would take it, you know.
Yeah.
And in certain cases, a lot of that stuff we just packaged up for the next disaster. Our county sent several van loads of things to East Kentucky during the 2022 summer flood. So,
yeah, didn't they like close one of the warehouses over there, Jay? You know, where they were keeping all the donations. They actually closed one or two, maybe two of them. I don't remember exactly.
When that tornado hit, we had a location for emergency disaster supplies. Is one building. Very quickly, because of the donations that came in, became three buildings. We had open, empty buildings there in the county. And by the end of the first week, we have five sites, large industrial buildings that were sitting empty that we were bringing things into and putting stuff out of. Even with the ag supplies, I went out and got an empty building that, that David and Vicki both helped me manage stuff out of. We used as a location. I think Vicki put the very first stuff in that building that some folks were bringing when I couldn't get out there to them. But before it was over, we filled and emptied that building several times with supplies we were giving away. And,
So just be cognizant of what you're going to give and when you're going to give it. And give those folks a minute to kind of get their breath and see what they actually do need.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's probably the best advice for sure.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
I remember my sheriff, actually a deputy sheriff, pulled up to me one day there in the extension office parking lot. We were boxing stuff up to go to one of those warehouses. He pulled up and rolled down his window and just started shaking his head. He said, "There's got to be a better way." And that's exactly what we're talking about is how do you define that way?
And, you know, some of these trainings are a result of that, of, you know, how do we do something better? You know, we always find out how we – you know, when something happens and it's over and it's all said and done, we can all sit back and go, you know, how could we have done better?
You know,
and I think that's a result. You know, this is what this training is about, is to how can we help and do a better job of helping?
You know, and one of the areas of focus for this disaster training, I know it's the area that agents had to be basically certified in before they could take it, is just basic communication. When you're in one of these incident command situations, being able to speak the same language as those emergency personnel folks that are coming in from other places helps that communication flow happen a lot easier. So that's a good step forward, I think.
Most definitely. And I want to say also, you know, we're talking about the agents training right now, but this will be a good thing for, you know, your own farming operation to take into account. You have a tornado come through and you lose miles of fence line, what are you going to do? If your power's out for 2 weeks out in the middle of nowhere, what are you going to do? So ask yourself these questions. I mean, agents, they're all coming to you for answers, but think about your own situation also.
Yeah, you got to be able to survive, you know, and I think that probably would have not been any problem for lots of folks. But in this time, it is a problem for lots of folks. So that's, you know, you need to be able to survive. You need to figure out how you're going to survive.
Right.
And you need to do it before something happens that you have to figure out whether you know if you can survive or not.
Well, and that's probably a good place to turn directions of this whole recording and go in that direction of how do you get prepared. Yeah. You know, we're talking about agent trainings and how agents can help respond. But for those individuals, you know, for your individual household, your neighborhood, your community, how do you go about starting and being prepared to respond to something like that? And I think it has to start with a small, simple plan, right, just for your own house. And if you've got your own house in order, then get out and talk with your neighbors and help your neighbors develop a plan. As soon as you can, have a neighborhood plan and know who's got what. Know who has a generator maybe. Know who has a big freezer that you can move things into. I think those are all steps along the way. But the very first step for anybody, I feel, is developing that mindset and developing that understanding that this could happen to me. Because most folks, I feel like that's their mental block in not doing it.
And too many times, and that's a very good point. Like, too many times I talk to folks, and I say, you taking shelter during a tornado warning? I said, man, we've never been hit by a tornado. We have warnings all the time.
I'm looking out the window, man.
Yeah.
Sitting on the porch.
But as I tell these folks, like, you never know when it'll hit you. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, hopefully it never does, but there's definitely a chance. So. Yeah.
You need to think about that, too. You need to think, you know, I mean, that's, you know, disaster preparedness. You know, what am I going to do if I get hit by a tornado?
That's right.
What am I going to do if I lose my house? Do I have neighbors I can go to? Do they have generators? Do they have, you know, what are they on a well? Mm-hmm. Or can I get water? How can I get water? I mean, you may or may not be able to get water.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, especially if you're on county water and something hits the pump mm-hmm. station or something of this nature, you may or may not be able to get county water.
At least you have some direction.
Yeah.
Peace of mind, if something were to happen, you have an idea of what you need to do. And that's the peace of mind aspect. And, you know, everyone's going to be a little bit scattered brain when this stuff happens. Sure. But maybe it won't be to that much of an extent if you mm-hmm. are prepared a little bit.
To me, I feel like especially whether we call them natural disasters or just weather-related events, it's the most realistic thing that we could have happen to us yeah. across rural America. We worry about, you know, threats from other countries and all these things that we see on the news, and all of those could be very just as real. Mm-hmm. But more than likely, the number one thing we're all going to have facing us is some type of weather-related event that's going to cause a disturbance in our daily lives. Mm-hmm. That may not be a tornado destroying our house, but it could very well be a tree falling on a substation and us being without electricity for 3 or 4 days, mm-hmm. or taking out power lines like the ice storm in mm-hmm. 2009 did in our area. Mm-hmm. Being able to respond to those types of events without very much disruption in your daily life is the fastest way to get over them. Just yeah. to be the ability to be able to keep yourself on track and keep everybody working and going about what they're supposed to be doing mm-hmm. is nothing short of a blessing, honestly. I'll say it.
Well, and I think too, one of the things as we're talking about, you know, being prepared and things to think about is most of us know who our neighbors are. And I know in some places, you know, it's more, you might not know everybody like you do out in the country where you know everybody for 3 miles. Right. But I think we need to remember, too, those ones, the elderly, that we need to check on, that needs to be on the list of, hey, we need to go check on this person. We need to go check on them, make sure they're okay, because they may not have somebody else to check on them, and they're not, you know, they may not be physically able to do the things that need to be done, and just making sure that somebody's checking on those folks too.
I think that's a good point. Elderly, anybody that may be stuck in the house, could be a younger mm-hmm. person who is sick or has some type of physical inability that keeps them from getting out and seeing to themselves. Having all those things on your preparedness list is a good mm-hmm. idea.
Yeah, you know, I live on a road, and I guess I'm the only farmer on that road, and I'm the only person that has a tractor. So when we have snow events of any sort, I'm the guy that goes and clears everybody's driveway, you know. And, yeah, it takes a lot of time, but, you know, that's part of being a good neighbor mm-hmm. and part of doing the things we need to. And checking on those folks during the ice storm, there's an elderly couple that lived. They have both passed on now, but they lived up the road from me. And I would go in and check on them and see if they were all right. They had gas heat. And they had a gas stove, and they could cook and stuff. And she actually had cooked some cookies mm-hmm. and gave me some cookies for clearing their driveway and getting the limbs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just being a good neighbor and being prepared. And mm-hmm. if you've got those resources, being willing to help other people, really is what it's all about.
Absolutely.
So, Matt, what are we looking at on this winter weather here? What's our outlook? Do you have your crystal ball there?
I want to write this down so that we can get it exactly right.
Has he checked the persimmon seeds as well?
Yes, that's right. Exactly,
you know, I will tell you guys, speaking of that, I was on my patio last week, and I saw one of those woolly worms crossing the table. Uh-oh. Now, something I've never seen in my life happen. It was totally white. And tell you the truth, I need to look up what total what white means.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
But black and, you know, that brown, orange color. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But total white, I'm hoping we're not in for a major blizzard or something.
I don't know that I've ever seen a solid white.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so we're in line to see El Nino. And that's a climate pattern, helps us predict future weather patterns out months at a time. And it's based on equatorial sea surface temperatures in the Pacific Ocean. And whether they're cooler, whether they're warmer, it changes our jet stream, the our average position of the jet stream aloft. Yeah, I'm getting I'm getting complex now, right? But anyways, in basic terms, an El Nino usually brings us a dry winter in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And a dry winter is not good news for us right now. Mm-hmm. We just saw one of our driest Septembers we've seen. I think it was 16 or 17th driest September. That day goes back to 1895. We've went through the first half of October. We're running about an inch below normal across the state. Some folks have struggled to even see a quarter inch mm-hmm. in October thus far. And this is our second straight fall. And last year we were in La Nina, which usually means wet conditions over the winter. And we've had low river levels as of late. That was the same case last year. We had some replenishment this past winter, but with El Nino in place, dry conditions, you know, will we get that replenishment in 23 going into 24? So I do have a little bit of concern heading into next spring, whether we're going to have the moisture available to correct these problems we're currently seeing. The past decade or so, our winters have been extremely wet here in Kentucky. So I'm hoping that's the case again, but again, with a strong El Nino in place, usually that means drier conditions here in the lower Ohio Valley. So something to watch. There's no guarantee. There's, you know, it's hard to look out this far three sure. months ahead of time, but that's the best we got. So,
well, I want to give everybody an update on what a white woolly worm means. So you'll know, Matt, it means it is a strong indicator that heavier than average snowfalls or even a blizzard can be expected in the region.
Well, we need it.
So I hope you keep it up there in Lexington and we don't have as much snow down there.
We have the residual effect.
That's right.
Tell you the truth, I mean, at least in my neck of the woods over in Lexington, we really haven't had a good snowfall since, I want to say, 2015. We saw 17 inches at the start of March. Yep. And it's been a while. I hate to say this, but we're due.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that year, 2015, in our end of the state, we had two pretty good snowfalls.
There
one
was,
in yeah. February, yep. one in March.
Yes, yep. I remember.
And it was, at my house, it was right at a foot, both of those.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I remember vividly because I was calving. I remember that vividly. Yeah.
There was a lot of people that lost. Yeah.
Yes. It's not a good situation, for sure.
The second one was easier than the first one. That March one, the ground was already warmer, a little bit underneath, and it didn't stick around near as long as the February.
The February one was the rough one.
It was a week of
nastiness.
Pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no conditions for anything to be melting during that one. I mean, even parking lots and things, you just couldn't get them.
So I'm in hopes that Matt is going to keep all the snow in Lexington and not any western Kentucky. We're just going to have some cool temperatures, average rainfall.
Inch of rain once a week.
Yeah, and he's going to keep all the snow up there because if I never see another snowdrop, a snowflake, it'll be too soon.
You're not asking for much, David.
I know. He's a man.
He is the weather guy.
When we do have the rain in the falls, whether it's normal on track or slightly abnormal, it doesn't seem to be these huge, long, prolonged rain systems that we typically have in the spring. It's more like 3 or 4 days of wet nastiness, giving it all time to soak in and slow, steady rains. At one time, I remember November was one of the wetter months for the state of Kentucky of the year. Yeah. We always think about, you know, rain in the spring and April showers and all that. November, in historically, can be a pretty wet month.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here the past decade, fall is our dry season here in the state of Kentucky, but these droughts seems like they've been hitting this time of year.
Is that just a weather pattern change, Matt? What do you attribute that to?
Again, it is our dry season, and 16, we had, that was the Eastern Kentucky wildfires. Mm-hmm. 19, we had our driest September on record, and it was also very warm. That's something that's helping us out in 2023, is it's been relatively cool. Yeah. And 2022 had another one. We had two droughts last year. Right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Some in Western Kentucky may say it was just one big drought, but if we've had drought, it's tended to be during the fall season here in the state of Kentucky. So,
yeah. And we had a little bit of a dry spell kind of in May that only lasted in Western Kentucky. It didn't last, but now, you know, Vicki and I we've been on some farm visits in some different places, and, you know, on one side of her county, it is really dry up towards Union County, Morganfield, those kind of places. And then when you kind of get back towards Slaughters and back towards Madisonville, it's not as bad. I mean, because we were on two farms on both ends of the county, and it was a lot of difference.
Drastically different.
Yeah, and just in that county alone.
Yeah.
In the southern Pennyrail region, they've gotten quite a bit more rainfall than others across Western Kentucky also. So they're sitting all right, but I'm on the state drought committee, and just based on how dry it's been in October, we're probably going to see another expansion of drought and abnormally dry conditions with this update this upcoming week. Now, when this airs in November, hopefully we're looking a lot better. But looking at the outlooks, I mean, we need a significant rainfall event. More times than not, you know, we're hoping for a hurricane to come out of the Gulf of Mexico. You don't want to see the impacts down that way, but you want 1 to 2 inches of soaking rainfall up this way. We haven't seen it.
Well, and, you know, throughout the summer, it seemed to me, and I did not look at the numbers to tell this, but it seemed to me throughout the summer, we didn't have the humidity that we normally do. And I think a lot of that was attributed to the fact that we weren't getting those fronts coming from the south. Typically, we see moisture come just straight up the Mississippi Valley, and we didn't have that this year. Whatever frontal boundary was there that was keeping that to the south kept the storms that we did have coming from the northwest and the west, which are lower humid areas. Yeah, yeah. And we only had the rain that came through, and that was it.
So you bring that up. I remember writing an ag weather update back in June or July, and I remember talking about this was one of the least humid summers we've seen here in the state of Kentucky.
I'm glad somebody else noticed that.
Yeah,
you had a few days it was humid, but then it wouldn't stay that way. It was just for a short amount of time, and then it was back to very tolerable, which was nice from if you're having to work out in it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was one of the easier summers to get by in that we've had in a while, but consequently you flip that coin, that meant it was drier than normal in certain places in certain areas. Talking about the southern Pennyrail being okay rain wise, there are pockets that were pretty dry. I know David and I have compared this. We're both in Christian County, but we're on opposite ends and an east and west side of the county. I'm the northeast. He's in the west to southwest county. I got a lot of rains that he never saw. And it seemed like every week or whenever a front come through, I was catching a corner of every storm. I was getting 3/4 of an inch of rain just like, you know, every 5 or 6 days, which was nice where I was. But you get a little east or a little west, and it was, you know, a little east, they were getting tons more rain, and just west and south of us, it was a little drier.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because I was looking at the data last night, and Fort Campbell, is that on southern end of the county?
Southern end.
I'm pretty close. I'm pretty close to that.
They haven't cracked a tenth of an inch this month yet, so, that about right?
Yeah, sounds about right. But, you know, we had, we have 7 inches there. One of those storms that came through about the time I was at the state fair, I was gone. It was the second week of the state fair. Yeah. And we had like 7 inches. It was quick.
Yeah.
And it was like 6 hours. And anyway, it was as high as the water collects right behind my house. And there at a sinkhole, and it takes it a few days to go down. And it was higher than I have ever seen it, ever.
Consecutive weeks. In my lifetime. At my house, while everybody else was having that dry point the 1st of September. Mm-hmm. End of August through, I guess, maybe the 3rd week of September, in 4 consecutive weeks, I had 3 inches, 6 inches, 5 inches, and 3 inches.
Yep.
I was actually out of town the week of that 6-inch rain, and my wife was sending me pictures of water in the basement and, you know, the creek below the house and everything, and I think I texted David, did you get any of that rain? I hadn't seen a bit of it.
That's right. That's true.
But I think it's points out, you know, you said what we need is 2 inches of soaking rain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference between 2 inches soaking rain and 6 inches in 2 hours or 30 minutes. Or,
sure.
Because you're not getting to utilize that. That's not helping us in the way that we need to be helped.
Yep. It all ran off.
And that's what happened this summer. Yeah. Is the places that, if you just looked at just sheer inches of rain and nothing else.
You think we were all right.
Exactly. Because there was so many of those rains where you got multiple inches, just like he was talking about in August, where he got that 7 inches. And of course, then you just mentioned how Mayfield got 11 inches. And I know parts of Callaway County got 6, 7, 8 inches
right.
at one time. Where I lived one time, we got 7 inches in early May. There were several different places that got multiple inches of rain, but it was the way that it came didn't really benefit.
It's all about the timely nature of the rainfall.
Yeah, it's so much runoff.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, you just lose so much of it. But
it's running off, but as Matt said, it's not making it to the river, and that's because it's been so dry that it just takes so much to recharge it.
That's right. We've talked about. Just preparing for a disaster. But Matt, talk to us just a little bit about just going into the winter. Of course, we don't know what it's going to do. You know, you all have the ability to look at different weather patterns and say, you know, usually this is kind of what happens in this scenario. But just going into the winter season, what are some things that just homeowners in general, particularly livestock folks, you know, what can we do to get prepared for winter now and for, you know, any scenario that comes up, but just preparing for winter?
Yeah. As we've been pointing out this entire podcast, have a plan. We got to hammer that down, but have a plan. And, you know, winter weather can be just as impactful. I think you mentioned 2009 earlier. You guys saw, 1 to 2 inches of ice accumulation in western Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
The bluegrass saw a major one, 2003. Eastern Kentucky, I'll talk about this at your trains tomorrow, but they saw 3 straight ice storms in February 21, followed by a 2 to 3 inch rainfall event, which induced some big-time flooding over that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when people think about winter weather, I mean, we think about snow and ice and whatnot, but we get a lot of, I mean, this past decade, we've gotten a lot of rain in the winter, too.
Yep.
So
yep.
Those low-lying areas, have them on the back of your mind if you got some animals down in those areas. But, you know, losing power for a couple weeks in agriculture can be a problem. We got to think about generators. Now, using these generators in a safe way, you know, you don't want to put these things in your garage. Mm-hmm. You want to have plenty of ventilation. What's the rule? 20 feet away from doors or windows.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, think about these precautions you want to take whenever you're putting together your plan. We talk about travel and whatnot, maybe just from a personal standpoint. Pack a blanket in your car. Mm-hmm. Maybe pack some snacks in your car that will last for quite a while, some water. I've seen winter weather events around here. You know, 65 gets clogged, or if there is a major wreck on 65, you may be sitting there for a long time.
And it's not safe to sit there a long time in a running vehicle.
It is not safe.
From a carbon monoxide standpoint.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you the truth, it's not, I mean, just staying on that interstate and you have a pileup happening behind you, I mean, yeah, there's issues all around, but putting yourself in a good spot, making sure your car is gassed up.
Don't let it get, just because these new cars tell you that you have 45 miles to empty doesn't mean you need to wait till you get there when it's really cold.
Don't pay no attention to that. I run mine down to zero the other day and went 7 more miles. Afterwards, I'm ashamed to say that, but that's the truth.
Jay, is not being prepared.
I got caught out somewhere and didn't even realize that I needed fuel, and I was actually going down the road and knew how far it was to the next exit to get off. But no, that is not the thing to do by any means. And we always like to wrap the show up with a timely tip, and we talked earlier about today's timely tip just simply being prepared, to be prepared. Look at the likelihood of these situations that it could happen around you that you may face, and be prepared for them. Having that winter kit in a car, I think, is a simple thing that anybody could do. It doesn't necessarily mean going out and spending a bunch of money on survival items. It's simply just putting together a kit of things you might have in your household to be ready and be prepared for that, whether it's that heavy coat or a blanket. I like for folks to have a good pair of waterproof shoes or boots in a car if they're going to have to get out and walk. That might be a key thing to make sure they get to where they need to go. Same thing for your house. A house can be a little more involved with whether it's having water on hand. Whatever utility you might do without, have some way of backing that up, whether it's an alternate source of heat, a generator to provide electricity. For folks like me who require certain types of medicines that they have to have on hand, having those and the ability to store them and store them safely so that they stay good and don't expire or don't get contaminated may be the only step you need to get you through to the next day. So simply just be prepared.
And you mentioned it earlier, but you haven't just then. I thought you was going to. But the other thing is making sure if you've got those generators, it takes fuel to run those.
It does.
So making sure that you are prepared for that. Because I know in 2009 during the ice storm in Dixon, Kentucky, there for a while you couldn't get gasoline.
Along with a lot of
others. Well, that's
no
true.
Cough but, drops.
No cough drops.
So just keep it in mind if you've got some gas, you know, those tanks, make sure that you get some fuel and be prepared for that.
I appreciate you reminding me, because before we started recording, I did talk about that. Having a generator is one thing, being able to feed it is another. The gas stations closest to my house in 2009 when we went through that ice storm were on a different electric service, and they were without no power. So you couldn't get gas at those gas stations. You had to go clean into Hopkinsville to do it. I would go late at night and still sit in line with people who were filling their cans for the generators. So my standard fare is right now I keep 4 or 5 gallon cans filled with clean fuel ready to run. And when I see a front coming or I know a big storm like is likely to happen, I make sure they're topped off. If we get through that storm and I didn't use them, I don't want that gas to get old, so I run it through a vehicle and get rid of it and then fill them up again. I'm filling up those cans with good, clean gasoline at least once a month and having them on hand, using that fuel so that it's not sitting around.
Yeah. If you don't have to get out, don't get out. That's also good advice. You
absolutely.
Know, if
you don't add to the problems.
Exactly. Don't make it worse than what it is. So that's all good advice for sure.
All good stuff. So, Matt, we appreciate you being here with us today. As David mentioned earlier, our first three-peat.
Absolutely.
So, and plan on being a four-peat and a five-peat, because we're awesome. We're going to have you around more often.
That's right.
And appreciate you being a part of these trainings. We thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.